Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Justice Mosqueda. I should mention ahead of time for today's show, when we went to record today's episode, I accidentally launched it as a live episode and not our usual recording. So we did have some, questions coming in and things like that for just a couple of moments. And we got to, kind of have a little bit of fun with it. It was a happy accident. Some people got to view it live, but no harm, no foul. It was still a great discussion with Justice Mosqueda. So you can stick around for that in just a moment. We did have a couple of injury updates that I wanted to go over really quick from Matt LaFleur's interview, press conference on Monday. Romeo Doubs and Evan Williams, both still in concussion protocol. A little bit nervous about Romeo Doubs because it's been a hot second now that he's been in protocol. Of course, the biggest thing is hope he's okay. Hope that he can get through this sooner rather than later just for his own well-being. I'm sure that's not a fun thing to be going through. But from a Packers standpoint as well, obviously a very important member of this team. And, you don't want any messing with head injuries, right? So, again, most importantly, hope he can get through this. Hope he's doing okay. And then, we're going to kind of keep an eye on it from a Packers standpoint as well. But Romeo Doubs and Evan Williams, both still in concussion protocol. Javon Bullard was labeled as week to week, while Dontavian Wicks is said to be good to go. No issues with him moving forward. And with that, let's get to my good friend, Justice Mosqueda, and talk all things Green Bay Packers. Justice freaking Mosqueda, my friend, how are you doing? Welcome back to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Always great to be chatting with you. What's new? How are your Oregon Ducks faring with their seeding in the college football playoff? How's life, my friend?
Life is great. My arm is not broken enough anymore that I can't carry like a 30-pound litter box thing situation up two floors. So I got that going for me. Ducks won the Big Ten, even though they tried to bumble it away at the end. So feeling great, other than the Packers losing.
That was less great, and I wish that did not happen, but here we are, 0-4 against teams better than them. Did you see the crazy stat today of how the entire division outside of Chicago is 28? Yeah, it's 28-3 besides playing each other. So if you take away the games, Green Bay against Detroit, Detroit against Minnesota, Green Bay against Minnesota, teams not named Chicago are 28-3 so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy, and that's why we're in the situation that we're in right now. I know I wrote an article where I was like, they're playing for pride for the rest of the season, and people didn't like that, but that's the situation. Like, they can go 0-4, and it's like a coin flip, basically, whether they make it in the playoffs or not. If they win one, it's like an 80% chance that they make the playoffs. You're not going to get higher than the 5, and even the 5 is a bit of a stretch. At this point, I know everyone's like, well, you want to avoid the 7 seed because you don't want to play the Eagles. Do we not want to play the Eagles? We should have beaten the Eagles the first time around. The only team I'm really worried about is Detroit, and then on a lesser extent, Minnesota. Minnesota is the team that I would least like to see, relative to Philadelphia. So I don't really care if we play the Eagles or not. We're going to be on the road the entire time, this playoffs until we lose or we win a Super Bowl. So a lot of soul searching in the last month of the year, I guess, is what we're in for, because there's not really a ton of stakes other than, not getting rusty, I guess. I don't want to debate rust or rest for a month. That's not the thing I want to do. That's very sports radio-y.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And Justice, I should probably let you know, since I'm an idiot, I put this as a live stream instead of a recorded episode. So we are live for everyone. Cool. So we'll keep it live. We can do that. That's easy enough. But we'll still kind of go through our rundown per usual, and then maybe we'll get to a couple questions at the end as well. But for those of you joining, welcome. This was supposed to be just me and Justice recording for tomorrow's episode. But you know what? Why the heck not? We can make it live nonetheless. So appreciate you all for being here, even though this was an unplanned activity. But sometimes the best mistakes are the ones that you don't intend to make. And here we are nonetheless. So just as per usual, I will get you your floor to, or I will give you the floor to go in any direction that you want to go in for any major takeaways from this game. And we'll go from there.
The biggest thing is the defense. And it's what, I mean, it was talked about coming into the week, right? About, you know, how Miami was able to move the ball down the field in the second half of that game, where they're just throwing, you know, digs or glances or whatever you want to call these in-breaking routes, you know, behind the linebacker level. It continued in this game. Just wrote an article about the NFL pro stats. I think they had Goff completing 14 of 17 attempts. So that's like nine 9 yards per attempt with over 80% completion percentage on those in-breaking routes. We've said all year, I said starting in the summer, and it was not a very popular opinion at the time, if the pass rush is not good, this is going to be an issue. What the problem is with single high defenses, or defenses that, you know, if you're going to play too high, it's you're either going to spin into a single high coverage or you're going to stay in cover two. The issue is always going to be, can the pass rush get home before, you know, in breakers, whether it be crossers or digs or glances or whatever it is from, you know, these and teams are getting in more condensed formations offensively. So it's like you're playing against two slots on the same side, right? Yep. Saw that with both Miami and Detroit. You're going to give up those plays. It basically turns into a timer, and it's can your pass rush get there before, you know, those guys can cross those linebackers. The Packers linebackers had 5 pressures in this game. The Packers edge defenders, or entire defensive line actually had 5 pressures in this game. I think the linebackers had like 18 total pass rushing attempts. The defensive line had like 173 or something like that combined. I mean, that just kind of tells a story, right? They can't get home unless they bring a linebacker, and their coverage at the linebacker level is what's getting gutted already. So it's not like that's something that they can really afford. I don't know how much you get better there in season. Throwing your hands up and saying the pass rush needs to get better isn't really a plan. That can be an observation, but that's not really a plan. And the biggest thing that really worries me about this is it's not just, okay, linebackers, just start bailing. Just start bailing in the passing game. Because you know what's happened against Detroit and Minnesota, these 3 losses? Those guys start bailing, and those teams start throwing screens, and then the screens start popping off. And it's just a recipe for disaster right now. I understand the teams winning football games and all that stuff, and there's not as many teams that can take advantage over the middle of the field like the Miami Dolphins and Detroit Lions, right? Like, that's kind of Tua and Goff's whole thing. I think Goff is currently leading the league in in-breakers. But it's certainly a concern, and it's a concern moving forward. I sure think Adrian Cooper is going to help. I don't think that he's going to mask everything. It's a linebacker issue. It's a pass rush issue. McDuffie's given up like 200 yards. Depending on how you want, like, there's a hole in a zone, right? Does that count as him giving up the yards, or is that just a play calling thing?
Right.
That's happened over the past 2 games. I've seen people say they want to play more man coverage and stuff. Dog, we got Zane Anderson in the post right now. We're down 3 preferred starters at defensive.
Oh, somehow we just lost Justice. Not exactly sure what happened there. In the meantime, I will get to a couple of your questions. For those of you who are just joining us, yes, this is a happy little accident. I did not mean to do a live chat for this, but we are here chatting live nonetheless. So yeah, we'll get to, if you guys do have a couple questions. Well, there's Justice. He's back.
Of course it happens on the live stream. My Chrome updated. That's great. my point was going to be, you know, we got Zane Anderson in the post. We're down 3 preferred starters. I think one of the interesting things, I don't know if you caught this when you were watching film. Do you know who the guy who's getting beaten man coverage was when they actually did try to play man against Goff?
I've watched all 22 on offense. I have not watched all 22 on defense yet. So I will guess the person being beat in man coverage, man, I have to think back in this game. Well, Stokes got beat by Patrick on the touchdown. Nixon got beat a couple times. Was it McKinney?
Bullard.
Was it Bullard? Yeah.
That Bullard on those crosses. Yeah, Bullard on those crosses. So do you want to play man? Do you? Like, I don't know.
Not right now.
I sincerely do not know.
And that's kind of my, like, the overarching question here is, like, and you were kind of alluding to it, of like, is there a solution to this, right? Like, is there a way? I do think getting Jair and Cooper back, and if you get, you know, Williams and Bullard back, and obviously, like, I think that all helps to a pretty decent extent, but it doesn't necessarily help the pass rush. It doesn't necessarily, Cooper helps the middle of the field to some extent. I do think Jair on the outside maybe allows you to drop that safety in the box a little bit more, but like, it does seem to me that like, maybe they still somehow crazily, despite all the money, resources, draft picks that they've put into this defense, just don't have the requisite resources that they need somehow to make this defense work.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now, where it's like the pass rush has to get better next year. Hopefully it develops in the last month of the season. But I mean, how many get what we've seen, like 30 games out of LVN at this point? I don't know how much we're holding our breath that, you know, these last four games are what's going to, you know, make or break or really get him to kick it into high gear. So, yeah, I mean, I know this game was close, but it shouldn't have been close. You can pat yourself on the back for that. There are multiple Detroit Lions pass rushers wearing numbers in the 60s in this game, right? That team was down bad. LaFleur was talking about how they were considering, you know, Jamal Adams like a true linebacker in those sets in his presser today when he was talking about the teams matching us at base when we're going 11. Jamal Adams signed with the team on Monday. He got activated
from Alexander the practice squad there too
that day. Like, that was as down as we're probably going to get, like, this version of the Detroit Lions. And it just wasn't, the defense just wasn't enough. So, not super optimistic that the team is going to be able to, you know, get over that hump against Minnesota and Detroit specifically, because they're both teams that have talent at wide receiver. They'll put guys in the slot. They'll throw those in cutters. They'll throw the screens that protect the in cutters. It just really, to me, boils down to a talent issue. And I know that sucks because that's not something that's going to get fixed on December 9th. And that's a punch to the nuts, but it is what it is. That's what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, this game was frustrating more in that regard than I think really any of the other previous games up until this point. I am, again, curious if they have everyone on defense, if they do have Jair, they do have Cooper, how much that can potentially help some of that stuff. Yeah, it almost felt like, I know you mentioned the blitzing linebackers. It felt like, you know, people were asking me, like, why is McDuffie blitzing so much and why isn't Quay? Because Quay just had that really good game.
McDuffie had three blitzes, had three pressures on like eight blitzes.
Also, he couldn't cover. Also, he couldn't cover. So
he's given up 200 yards in the last two games. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah, there's a little bit of both of that. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you kind of go from. I did think that Kenny Clark had one of his better games of the season. So that was slightly, not from a pass rush standpoint necessarily, but that was slightly encouraging. You know, Rashawn
Gary, down one of the screens.
True, true. And it's weird because I don't think, I know, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't have a feel like Green Bay's been a bad screen defensive team over the years, but, and Detroit, I thought was really, really good in their screen game, but Green Bay had no answer for it over and over and over again. And it also was frustrating. I talked about this the other day of like, it did feel like Green Bay's defense was playing on like third and eight, where like they were going against any other team, where if they held them to like fourth and one or fourth and two, that they were going to punt the ball. And Detroit had no, you know, intentions of that whatsoever. And there were a lot of plays where they would rally and tackle underneath, allow the underneath pass, and it would be fourth and two, fourth and three, fourth and one. And obviously we know Detroit would just get it the next play.
Yeah, they're playing a different game there, man. The fact that they went for it at the end, just absolutely.
What did you think of that, by the way? What did you think of that decision?
I would have kicked. I mean, what do I think about? I mean, that's a good team. I understand Dan Campbell just wants to, like, throw it out there. Man, if you're telling me if I don't get this down, it's going into OT, and I could just take this easy little chip shot. I mean, it wasn't even for anything. Like, you're playing the clock at that point. Yep. That's all you were risking was the clock. So you're, you know, to me, I kick there. But I know that, I mean, Dan's a psycho. Matt even joked today where they were talking about the play that they ended up challenging because apparently they didn't get the good look that we all got at home before they threw the challenge flag. And he was like, yeah, well, even if we would have gotten, they probably would have gone for it in that spot. It's like, all right, well, then why'd you throw that flag then?
I threw a flag in the first place.
Yeah, I just a little disappointed in the team overall. You know, people transitioned out of this cover three, cover two defense. There's a reason why you don't see a lot of these Seahawks defensive coordinators around anymore, even though they were really in vogue for a long time.
Yep.
I understand we're just getting out of the Fangio stuff. So, like, you got to run something that's not Fangio. So you had to sort of pivot to somewhere else. But with that being said, the way I would have put it is like, so I talked about this in the summer. We knew what the issues were going to be with this defense. If the pass rush doesn't get home, there's going to be stuff over the middle. What I would have thought would have mattered more was when Richard Sherman and, you know, Darrell Revis and all these guys are talking about how Halfley is great and he gets you very prepared for the game and you know what routes are coming and you know, at what depth the routes are breaking so you can sort of jump those routes and stuff like that. I would have thought that would have mattered more when you got two straight weeks of in cutters. Would have felt like we should have been able to get our hands on a couple of those if they're just thrown into the middle of the field like that. And it's just not happening. And I think some of that, again, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but some of that is them protecting that by running those screens and stuff like that. Again, Minnesota showed that, I think, in that first game that we had against them. The fact that, you know, you have two straight games of in cutters on film, really six dominant halves in the passing game, I would say, or six dominant quarters in the passing game, the last six that have been played against the Packers defense, and then two division games where the offense has been able to screen them to death. They're probably going to see this over and over until they prove they can stop it. And I just don't know if they have the horses where they could stop it. I mean, the last thing that we need is these pass rushers not pinning their ears back and thinking, you know, I got to start backtracking because there might be a screen if I come loose. Like, it's just, it's not cohesive. We talk about like complementary football all the time, but like the complementary defense where like the pass rush is not meshing with the coverage at all. And what the Packers are saying, that's a huge problem.
I totally agree. Do you think that part of the trouble covering the middle of the field has almost been like, that's the poison that Green Bay is willing to take because they know they aren't just good enough to stop everything and they are selling out to stop the run. They're selling out to stop the against Miami, Hill and Waddle on the outside, Williams and Amon-Ra St. Brown on the outside. It's weird that you go and you look at like the box score of this game, right? I mean, if I would have told you, and I'm going to try to pull it up here if I can here for just a second to get these numbers up, but like if I would have told you going into this game that Montgomery would rush 14 for 51, Gibbs 15 for 43, like 2 point something per carry. I think Montgomery's like 3.7. Laporta would be 5 for 54. Amon-Ra St. Brown would be 5 for 43. Like you would feel, I think, pretty good. Like, all right, they stopped the run. They kind of stopped their outside receivers for the most part, but so much middle of the field, both against Miami and Detroit. It does feel like, I don't know if they're just expecting we're going to rally and tackle and hope to punch the ball out, or we're going to hope that we get a couple tip passes up in the middle of the field that maybe we can pick off. But like, that's going to be the poison that we allow in this game that we drink and we take. But I don't know. I'd be curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the defense is designed to do, right? It's kind of like the opposite of the quarter system that we just came out of, right? In quarters game, you slow play the defensive line in the run game, you rally up and you tackle in the run game, even though you're playing with a light box. But what you're not going to do is give up a deep pass. Cover three, really, you're not going to give a deep pass either because you got McKinney in the middle of the field. He's going to solve a whole lot of problems for you guys. And then at corner, you're just dropping those guys into sideline zones, basically.
Yep.
Right. But you're going to give up stuff over the middle of the field. You got an extra body in the box when you drop down to safety, all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, even McKinney brought this up after the Dolphins game, I believe, where he was like, yeah, I mean, you basically said like too little too late for Miami, right?
Yeah.
And that was my concern, was I understand that approach once you have the lead. But if Miami would have stuck to that game plan the entire time, what does that game look like? And I think Detroit just kind of showed us a little bit. So, again, NFL teams are going to be watching this. They're going to be game planning. You're not going to get as much of it, I don't think, against Seattle. Seattle's more of a – like, they're 11 personnel. Like, JSN, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, their first-round slot receiver, he runs more routes out of the slot than anyone in the NFL right now. And they're more of like a spreadish type of offense. Grubbs comes from the college game. Obviously he was the OC at University of Washington last year, stayed in Seattle, got the new gig, all that stuff. But I do worry, like, the next test for me, I think, is that Minnesota game. And I think that's when we're going to get answers on this specific issue. But in that game, I'm telling you, like, what I'm going to expect is in cutters and screens, because it worked the first time for Minnesota and it worked this time for Detroit for sure.
Is there anything that you would adjust if you agree? I mean, again, we can't adjust the talent, right? Like, that's what it is. Yeah. You hope to get Jair and Edgerton Cooper back. So you can't adjust the talent. Is there anything that you would adjust defensively to say, like, we're going to have to do something different in these type of games?
I don't know, like, short of playing more man, which also then comes with the caveat of, like, are your players healthy? And then what do you do at linebacker? Because wasn't Eric Wilson, he got on the angle route, the little Texas route on the goal line?
Was it Wilson or was it McDuffie?
Was it McDuffie? Yeah. So he clearly can't cover that, right? So
to me, though, like, that, you can't have McDuffie in that situation, right? Like, and I don't like.
But if you're playing man coverage,
yes,
people want to play man coverage. If you're playing man coverage, that's the situation. So are you going to put McDuffie in that spot? Are you going to, like, do something with, like, Ketan Oladapo, or, like, you're healthy at safety? Now maybe can you play, like, Zane Anderson in that spot on, like, third downs or, like, goal line pass type of situations? Like,
I don't know if there's a Green Bay linebacker in my life that I think could have covered that one-on-one against Jahmyr Gibbs. Like,
but people want to play man. Andy.
Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I don't like Nick Barnett in that matchup. I don't know that there's anyone that Barnett maybe would give you the best chance. I don't know that I like anyone in that matchup. Excuse me. But, like, because he's going flat. And then you can see, like, McDuffie, like, if he doesn't make the adjustment, right, like, he's just going to get burned to the flat. So he, like, starts sprinting to the flat to get out there. I think honestly, he could have just continued to the flat and it would have been an easy touchdown pass anyway. And then, like, so McDuffie just starts going to the flat and then he just cuts back on the Texas route and it's just, taking candy from a baby.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't think people realize those are the questions you have to ask when you're like, I want to play man. I know it's just so simple to say, I just want to play man. Just beat your guy. Right.
Yeah. It's not a world that you want to live in. And, like, I think that's the thing, right? And I think that's where we go back to some of the talent deficiencies on defense is, like, I don't know that there's a right answer here. I feel comfortable with the one-on-one matchups on the outside with the corners. I don't necessarily feel comfortable with the linebackers in some of those matchups. Like, I love Xavier McKinney in the middle of the field. I think that certainly helps, but you've got to really, like, the intermediate middle of the field and shallow middle of the field and screen game have been major issues. You can't get after the quarterback unless you're blitzing. They're taking advantage of you being over aggressive with the blitzing by utilizing the screen game. It's just like, I think you called it the whack-a-mole the other day of, like, you hit one thing and it pops up somewhere else. And it's like, there's a few too many leaky holes in the boat right now. And just as soon as you plug one, two more have opened.
Yeah. I mean, unless you go, like, disguise heavy and you just kind of turn it into a game of rock, paper, scissors, right? I mean, maybe that's the answer, right? Is just hold your disguise even more, drop guys from weird angles. Like, the Packers are doing a lot of, like, weird inverted, like, cover two stuff. Maybe you need to do more of that and, you know, bring the nickel, bring an inside linebacker and all that stuff, but only rush four. Just kind of, like, confuse the quarterback a little bit. But that's really all you can do in season. I think the bigger conversation is, I think after this game, you know, the front office has to come together and they're like, all right, who are, like, the pass rushers next year in free agency? Because I don't think that this is, like, a draft, like the way that they draft and develop, and like, you got to infuse this defense with talent, like right now, like these guys, you got to get veterans in here. And that probably comes in the free agency market. And that's probably something that you need to start eyeing. I mean, we were talking about, you know, who could they add as a pass rusher, you know, at the trade deadline and stuff. They didn't seem to have any sort of interest in doing that. Maybe they'll be a little bit more interested in the offseason.
Hey friends, we are smack dab in the middle of holiday season, and there's only one thing better than the spirit of giving, and that's the spirit of winning. And right now you can make your holidays bigger and brighter with Prize Picks, the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. This holiday season, Prize Picks is giving away 2 free picks in December, and they're giving away $30+ million in rewards during Picksmas. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, do you think James Cook is going to have more than 60 yards next week? Joe Burrow, more than 1.5 touchdowns? Whatever you think, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season, and you can turn your sports opinions into real money in fewer than 60 seconds. This week, I'm going with a huge bounce back week for Jaden Reed after catching 0 passes last week. Don't see that happening again. I'm also going with Brandon McManus to make multiple field goals on the road in Seattle. I'm also going to be keeping an eye on Josh Allen versus the Lions as well. Whoever you want to pick, make sure you download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 lineup. What are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for?
Were you a Gabriel Murphy guy in the draft?
Is he still available? He's okay.
He's on the Vikings practice squad. Just got his first action this past week after being on IR the entire time. Played like 20-some snaps this past game. You know where they played him? A lot? On the interior. Gabe Murphy.
Weird.
Well, it was blitz packages. There was like heavy blitz packages. Okay. So it's obvious third down situations, but they played him on the outside. He split. Well, no, I shouldn't say he split. There was a play where the center had to try to guard 2 Minnesota Vikings because they came at the same time, and he just got right by and had a hit on the quarterback. There was nothing like super crazy. I went and watched his tape just to see how it looked in his first game because I liked him coming out of the draft. But just that he's a smaller speed type of guy, just something a little bit different. I don't think that they would do that, and I don't think it really moves the needle at this point. And I don't think it does anything, you know, more than Cox or Mosby or anything else at this point. But I don't know. There's not much out there at pass rusher and anything. I'm like willing to open any door at this point.
I don't know if it's coming this season. I'm being honest. And I know.
Not anything of any drastic nature. Probably nothing period, but certainly nothing that's going to move the needle in any significant sort of way for sure. No question about it.
I know it's kind of lame because people want quick fixes and stuff. And I'm just like, I don't think this is a quick fix.
Good luck in December trying to find anything in the trenches on either side of the ball. Like really almost any position anywhere at this
point. Hey, we signed Michael Jordan again.
We did sign Michael Jordan. I did not realize in any capacity that he had been actually starting games for the New England Patriots so far this year. So amazing that the Patriots let him go and nobody's even else is like, we don't even want him on the 53, much less starting, and Packers just grab him back on the practice squad.
Yeah, he had something like 11 starts or something this year. And I'm like, out of nowhere. That's great. I mean, the Packers could use an interior guy. I mean, they just played Kadeem Telfort, who's like 6'6 at guard in this game when Sean Ryan dropped out because they're now activating Jacob Monk. So Yeah, I mean, more interior offensive line depth in December. Sure, why not? He knows the scheme and he started this year. Like, not much more you could ask for. Like,
the Monk thing is still really weird to me that they would have him be the guy that's inactive, but it doesn't really matter all that much, honestly. But
yeah, I worry more at center than anything else. Goofy snaps at center is what I would be trying to avoid, especially after Elton had that game early on in the season.
What'd you think of Myers in this game? Speaking of that,
I thought he played pretty well. I thought you said Ryan. Myers stunk. Get Myers off of my team. I cut him.
I didn't know how I was going to respond to you for there for a second, because I thought you were going to like Myers actually played well in this game. I'm like,
I thought you said Ryan. I did the Y for some reason.
It's all good. I'm like, we might need to turn on the All-22 right here and now and watch this together. So either you're going to educate me or I'm going to educate you. But yeah, no, we're on the same page.
No, get Myers is gone. That's the other thing too. Like, I was looking over like the free agents and I was like, how many of these guys do we have to re-sign?
None.
I was like, we don't need to pay any of these dudes. Like, nope. some of the guys on tenders, sure. Why not? Josh Myers, like, no more wasted snaps on Josh Myers, man.
Brandon McManus is probably the only free agent that has any sort of potential. Like, yeah, go bring that guy back. And like, you bring him back 1 year, $5 million, $2.5 million guaranteed or something. Bring in another UDFA or something like that. And if they like somehow he looks amazing and you found a Brandon Aubrey out of somewhere, then awesome. You can make that decision, but just go with McManus if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, the Packers are going to have some money this offseason, but that's also,
and you guess where it's all going to go again.
Oh, it's going to go on defense and they're
going to go on the defense, all the money, all the draft picks, not all, but you like the vast majority of resources are once again going to go towards trying to put together a competent defense.
Andy, people are going to freak out when Jair gets his salary converted again.
Yeah.
They're going to freak out.
I might be leading the bandwagon of people freaking out when he gets his salary converted again. It's a tougher one. Because of obviously the injuries and stuff like that. I don't think I would do it. I think I would either play it out or just flat out release. I don't think I can swallow the bumping out it and like putting it against future salary caps and things like that. That's going to be a hard pill to swallow.
They just did it for so long for Bakhtiari that I'm like, if you're doing it for Bakhtiari, you're probably going to do it for Jair.
Yeah. You're probably right.
Jair's on field play is not an issue. I mean, he had the bad week one, but outside of that, he's been pretty good. I mean, he's not been Pat Sertan or anything like that, but he's, you know, what you paid that money for. Yeah, exactly.
He's a good corner. There's just no question about that. It's always interesting in how they handle these situations where it's like, they get an inkling that Aaron Jones is like maybe getting to the point where he's going to start missing some games. And they're like, we're out. We're like, we're just going to move on from this right now. And then like you get these other situations where it's like problem after problem after problem. And you actually see the deterioration and they're like, yeah, we're just going to extend that and push that out. And hopefully he can be healthy next season.
Yeah. I don't know. It's definitely weird. I mean, the short leash on the kickers, Bakhtiari gets the runway forever. I don't know. Even Preston, I thought they held on to Preston too long. I told you guys in the summer, I was like, to me, that's not a good scheme fit. And he must have felt the same at some point.
Anyone that's been following me for a while, I think I went over like every single offseason for the last like three or four off seasons of like why it was the right decision to move on from Preston Smith. And every single time the Packers were like, actually, we're going to extend him. Actually, we're going to kick this out longer. Actually, we're going to keep him on the team. And then finally this year at the trade deadline, they cut it in or, you know, cut the ties. And it was definitely the right time to do it, right thing to do. But yeah. I've been on that bandwagon for a while, and a couple seasons in there, he definitely proved that he still belonged and was good for the team. But there's also a couple seasons in there that did not go according to plan. And this was certainly one of them. Going back to offense for a second, we talked about Myers, a lot of conversation about the whole Jaden Reed situation, not many targets, not many snaps. Matt LaFleur addressed it today. Is this a situation where again, Jordan completed 12 passes. So you're like, you know, what are you going to do? Or does there need to be a little bit more Jaden Reed in the diet?
I mean, you can figure out ways to get him the ball, right? Like I think Matt said that where he was like, maybe we need to play him outside a little bit more in those type of situations where We got to have that in the game plan, ready to go in the game, where he's not just going to be a slot receiver, right? So that's one way to do it. I mean, you can manufacture touches, screens, and arounds, all that stuff. I don't make a big deal out of it just because of how the game script kind of went. Like, again, yeah, Jordan wasn't throwing a whole ton. I mean, they were down, what was it, 14 guys in the front seven? I wouldn't, in that situation, I would not be surprised any wide receiver who was not getting fed the ball, because I would want to run the ball, even if, you know, they quote unquote have base defense, because former safety Jamal Adams is playing linebacker out there. I'd want to run the ball in that situation too. So yeah, I'm not super concerned about it. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people who probably lost their fantasy matchups and stuff like that because of it, who are probably salty. But as far as like the outlook for the team, I wouldn't waste a second on it.
So here's the interesting thing for me that I had not totally realized until I kind of looked at it today. So go back to the Houston game. This has been Jaden Reed's numbers. 2 for 10, 2 receptions, 10 yards. Against Arizona, 6 catches, 28 yards. Against the Rams, 4 for 78, which is fine. Nope, I'm lying. Hold on. I'm going the wrong way here. Sorry. Give me 1 second. Going the wrong way. All right. That makes much more sense. All right. So Arizona, we're going to start with Arizona. 6 for 28 in a touchdown. Then Houston, 2 for 10. Jacksonville, 2 for 55. Then had a 5 for 113 game against Detroit in the first game. And then over the last 4 games, 2 for 23, 3 for 26, 3 for 24, 0 for 0. So you're looking at 23 yards, 26 yards, 24 yards, 0 yards over his last 4 games. Does have 3 touchdowns during that time. His rushing attempts since the Arizona game, 4 or 5 carries for 18 yards. And then one of those is a 23-yard run. 3 of them went nowhere. 1 went for -5. So it just, it's to me, like outside of that Detroit game, really since going all the way back to the Arizona game, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games. He's had one sort of Jaden Reed performance, and the rest have been pretty nondescript / non-existent at times. It just feels like they need to figure out ways to get him like 4 touches should be, I feel like, be a pretty good minimum for Jaden Reed in almost any given game.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who he might be a Pro Bowler this year. Like, yeah, keep feeding that dude. I will say Detroit plays man. When the Packers get man, they want to throw to Dobbs, who obviously wasn't on the field, and they want to throw shots to Christian Watson. Man hasn't been something that they've really done a whole lot with Jaden Reed.
Yep.
At least in the passing game, maybe you get man and, you know, you want to motion the guy across and do end arounds and stuff like that. I haven't studied the coverage in the run game and how that ties in that much, but I know when I sat in with the Thursday night broadcast crew, and we did the whole like stats packet blaster thing. Like, that was one of the big things they were harping on with me, was Reed not really getting touches in man. So maybe that looks better against the Seahawks when you're playing more of that, like, you know, McDonald runs kind of like quarter disguise. Sometimes it's man, but really it's like quarter disguise stuff. Like, he kind of runs the Baltimore stuff, if that makes any sense. So maybe they'll have a better game plan for that. But again, that's not a one-to-one. Like, there's very few teams that run man as much as Detroit does. Like, I would say, man, in the NFC, probably New Orleans. And I don't even know how much they do that since they've fired Dennis Allen, but that's probably the other big example. I mean, think about that New Orleans matchup last year. It wasn't Reed getting all those targets, right? It was Romeo Dobbs just getting spammed in man coverage over and over again until they finally got that one where they went up to win the ball game. So I think there's definitely ways, you know, he's in the slot, run a whip route. Like, I'm sure he can run a whip route. There's easy ways to just get the ball out of your hand and get it out there. I will say, I was pretty disappointed in the Packers offensive line in this game. I know we talked about Josh Myers
big time,
but like, the difference between when Goff is throwing those in cutters and the difference between Love when he was trying to throw those in cutters was really different. There's a reason why, like, people are talking about Jordan Love's got to stop bailing out and throwing off his back foot and stuff like this. I'm like, well, the offensive line needs to stop getting pushed back is part of it. And again, those are against guys who are second, third stringers a lot of times in those matchups. So I thought Tom had, like, that first quarter, that's the worst I've seen Tom play in the NFL. And I like Tom, but that first quarter was rough.
He did bounce back the rest of that game. Yeah. But yeah, that first quarter was weird. Just very weird.
I was just like, we can't stop these guys at all. Like it was odd coming out.
It felt like the whole team was tight early. And I don't exactly know why. It was totally off from the beginning. I don't know if they just thought, like, well, everyone's injured on the defensive front, so we're just gonna be fine and like whatever. But they did not play. I did not have on my bingo card the Packers offensive line getting beat up by that line's practice squad defensive line. Just that, especially once Aleem McNeil went out too, is not something that I had even remotely considered in that game.
Genuinely, like, Googling players' numbers on the Detroit Lions roster mid-game, because I'm like, who's 63? Why is he generating pressure from the edge? This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was like, it felt like they had offensive linemen out there, but they were beating Green Bay's offensive linemen. So, yeah, not ideal. Anything else that you saw offensively, defensively, anything else that gave you, like, any optimism, room for concern, any direction, anything?
I mean, they were able to score points on the offensive side. I will say, like, we've talked about this over and over again, but this team is battle-tested. Like, they do not let up. Like, no matter what the odds look like, they didn't have to continue to rally back over and over again in this game. They've done it throughout the season. I mean, if you're looking for optimism moving forward, it's that this team probably hasn't played the best ball that it can possibly play, right? And they've taken all these punches and keep getting back up. So the fact that there's, like, there really just genuinely does not seem to be any sign of quit in this team. And with that coupled with, Jordan Love can go off at any point. I thought Love had a pretty good game in this one, considering the circumstances and stuff. You know, you can get hot. And sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Flacco's got a ring. Eli's got two of them, right? So that's your optimism there.
Yeah, no, I did think Jordan played very well in this game overall. I mean, obviously the play to Watson, the touchdown pass to Tucker Kraft. I mean, 20 passes, only 12 completions, but a couple huge, massive throws within that. He missed Tucker early for the touchdown on the one little play where they leaked him out into the flat, overthrew that one. I think they still got a touchdown on that drive if memory serves. But, like, overall, I thought he did everything he could to navigate that game to put Green Bay in the best possible position to succeed, and should have had another touchdown to Josh Jacobs at the end too, to put them up, at the end until, of course, the pass interference call. So yeah, no, I thought he navigated the game very, very well, despite a bad pass rush. In fact, probably my least favorite play of his on the game was the last play where if you remember, he stepped up into the pocket and then rolled right, and then that's when they, like, face planted him into the ground. That was on that, like, I didn't think he really needed to bail that pocket. Like, the offensive line kind of had it covered. I know Sean Ryan kind of gets beat initially, but then he recovers very well and, like, kind of forces him into the rest of the offensive line, and he was kind of good. And the left, Walker had it shut down. Tom was doing well on it. He had the opportunity to kind of step up there, but Reed was kind of coming open on the left side, where I think if he just stays in the pocket, he might have Reed. I think the only reason Melton came open on the right side was because he stepped up and the safety kind of reacted to Love stepping up in the pocket. But that was one of the only plays where I thought he kind of maybe got a little jumpy in the pocket. And again, maybe even understandably so, based on what had happened up until that point in the game.
Yeah. How do you think, what do you think of the officiating? Hot button topic.
Yeah,
so it's, I'll say, I have no idea how the PI rules work anymore. Because even on that pick play, the ball's not out of Jordan's hands yet, right?
And it's within a yard, right?
Yeah. So I kind of think LaFleur had a point on that one. And then the other one.
Well, I don't know, too, just to go to that one really quick. If you watch it, like, Watson literally does, like, a jump, like, and, like, pivots his hips to try to avoid the guy. Like, it's not like he's just, like, I could see if he was like leaning back into the guy maybe or something, but like he literally like gets his head up and is like doing an ole to try to avoid the guy as best as possible. And then of course there's a collision, but like if we're going to do the feet got tangled at the point of contact sort of thing, like these two guys like went into each other. I don't know how you assign blame in that situation. Like, are you saying that like, hey, in any of those situations, because before, right, it used to be that it's up to the defender to get out of the way so that you're not pass interfering with the offensive player in that situation. And now it's like, if you collide, it's up to the offensive player to get, it's a weird situation.
Both Christian and LaFleur answered that question. They're like, what do you got to do in that situation? And they're like, get out of the way. I mean, that's not a teaching point. That's not technique. That's not like, it's just a random play that happens. It sucks. Like, I don't think anyone wants to see that being called a penalty. And then Detroit had one that was very similar that, you know, LaFleur was mad about. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that probably shouldn't have been flagged because the ball was still in Goff's hand. So it wasn't when the ball was traveling in the air. And then I rewatched the penalty Christian got called on. And I was like, wait, Love is still holding the ball. So I don't understand what this rule is then. Because I was like, as long as you're holding the ball, it's good. As long as you're within a yard is basically kind of how I interpreted it. And then I think the other one that kind of killed him, I know people talk about the Nixon hold at the goal line where he was coming free on the pressure. That one,
there was the Nixon illegal contact, and then there was the Nixon pass offensive pass interference at the end of the game.
That one I'm way more mad about because that came in a crucial moment. That was a clear push off. And gosh dang, man, we finally played man in a in beater, and you're letting the guy push off of us after we've been getting killed by this all game and we adjusted to it. And you just give it to him in a crucial spot like that. That sucks. That one sucks.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The final offensive pass interference to me is offensive pass interference. And I think that probably gets called maybe 1 out of 100 times in that situation. Like, I think it's pass interference. You should probably call it, but I don't think it gets called that often. For better or worse, not saying it should or shouldn't. I'm just saying, I don't think it does. And that's probably a bad thing.
I forgot the Nixon being called, what was it, holding?
Illegal contact, wasn't it?
Illegal contact, that's what it was.
At the goal line, right?
He got held, he had illegal contact, and then there was a push off.
Yeah.
What did the refs have against Nixon? This is bad for my agenda. The Packers don't have a corner problem, they have a Stokes problem agenda.
They do have a Stokes problem. That is the legitimate true fact. I mean, the Tim Patrick route against him was an all-time just nuke. And it, like, my favorite part about this play is it definitely feels like at the top of the route when Stokes realizes he's nuked, that he tries to just grab him and like tries to like make it so that he can't get, and he can't even grab him. He literally can't even grab him right to like commit the obvious penalty to Livesey another down so that it's not an obvious touchdown in that play. That was the other Nixon one too, where he got held coming through the line.
The original holding that I was.
Gotcha. Okay. Sorry. My bad. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Poor That's Keyshawn. Why I was like, the refs got it out for Nixon in this game. Yeah. I mean, genuinely, I don't know what Stokes is doing on this team. Like, I think Palantine probably is a better football player than him. But he contributes on special teams and it probably is a better corner at this point. I understand Stokes runs a 4.3 or a 4.2 or whatever. Like, so don't odd. Care. Don't yeah. care. Stokes this spring, if he even signs in the spring, it might be in the summer. He's going to sign a vet minimum deal and someone's going to try him out because they have the freedom of a 91 man roster. Like, why is it's he just, still on this
as
team?
Long as, as long as it's not Green Bay. Like, I just don't want to see not, another Kevin King situation. Like, is that like they kept giving Kevin King chances at like vet minimum or near vet minimum deals over and over and over again. Like, no. I don't know.
You can't, especially with Keyshawn is ahead of him on the depth chart and he's already splitting time with Valentine. Like, there's no way that they're going to bring back a potential corner four who's competing to maybe be corner three. Like, and that's not including adding someone potentially in free agency or the draft, which they'll probably do Like, there's just no way. I just don't understand, like, why he's still even on this team. Like, it's just all it does is incentivize the coaching staff to play the wrong guy. Get him out of here.
It does feel, and I don't know if it's like Goody that wants it because he was his first round pick or whatever, but like, this would be one of those moments where like, oh, the coaching staff keeps playing this guy. All right, I'm going to take it out of their hands and make it so that they like the money ball, the money ball moment where it's like, you need to play this guy at first base. No, I'm going to play this guy at first base. Well, you can't play him there anymore because they just traded him. It does.
Brian, please.
Go money ball on it. Thoughts on, I know you kind of touched base on it at the very onset of this, but likely going to be the number six seed, maybe can move up to the five, potentially could move down to the seven. What do you want to see from Green Bay in these final four games? And is there anything worth fighting for from a seeding standpoint at this point in time?
Again, I don't really see a big difference between Philadelphia and the rest of these teams. I think the Packers match up pretty well with Philadelphia. I understand Philadelphia is winning a bunch of games right now. I am not scared of the Eagles, at least not in the same way that I'm scared that the Lions might just like run us off the field again. I do want to see them compete in that Vikings game. And I know that's further out, but that Vikings game is going to be a big barometer for me. Cause if they can kind of show a turnaround there and, you know, take away some of these issues that we saw against Detroit, because they are kind of similar teams, at least on the offensive side of the ball, not the defensive side of the ball. That would go a long way for building optimism from my perspective. Really just like compete, show a little bit more consistency. I think they'll beat Seattle this week. Seattle's tackle situation is not great. If the pass rush wants to show up, this would be a great opportunity for them. Feel like we've been saying that for like 2.5 months at this point. Yeah. So I'm not going to hold my breath, but you know, that is a situation that's out there. The Packers are going to get a whole lot more nickel defense. Kind of at the worst time for them to be playing nickel defense, just because of, you know, they could be out three preferred starters and Evan Williams, Jair, and who's the other one? Bullard. I'm assuming Bullard's not going to play in this game.
Agreed.
So, I guess you're playing Keyshawn in the nickel again, and then hopefully Jair can play, and then you're rotating Valentine and Stokes because Stokes demands snaps opposite of them. It'll be interesting. I think Packers win. I'm just rooting for consistency. I'm rooting for signs of life that we can cover a dig route on the defensive side. I'm looking for signs of life for the pass rush, and I'm just hoping the DBs get healthy.
Jeff Hafley has his work cut out from this, not just this week, but like the remainder of this season with where this defense is at. I do hope that they can get Jair back. That would be a very, very nice addition. Hopefully Evan Williams clears protocol in time. By the way, not ideal that Romeo is still in protocol, by the way. Like nervy at this point in time. And obviously just the first and foremost, hoping for his health and his well-being in that situation. That was a scary looking situation. Was that against the Dolphins that happened? Was it the week before? Yeah. Not ideal, obviously, for Romeo. Hopefully he can get back sooner rather than later. Obviously take as much time as you need in that situation to get back to the where you need to be with it. But yeah, that's a little bit, again, nerve-wracking coming off of this extended time off and another game, and thinking that maybe he was going to be able to play last week because he was at practice. So hopefully he can make his way out of protocol, but yeah, just take that thing easy if you need to. That's a scary situation.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the wide receivers are going to be in a fine spot, even if Romeo can't play. I'm not super worried about that. I will say Seattle's got a pretty good duo right now, and they got a guy in the slot who can play really well. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how the Packers navigate that. I would assume Green Bay is going to try to run the ball. I mean, that's not super surprising. This is a run first team, even though, you know, we do have we play 11 personnel. We have a great slot receiver. Jordan Love is a gunslinger, all that stuff. But the core of this offense still wants to run the ball. And I think we're going to get a lot of that against Seattle because of how much too high that they end up playing.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by this matchup. Before we get there, we'll talk about Packers Seahawks just a little bit more in just a second. But I know a lot of people, and Joe in chat just posted it. Halfley needs to make the call and put Kalen King and Tyron Hopper on the field. I'm not a believer in either of those things. I don't think that fixes anything at this point in time. I would like to see maybe a smattering of Tyron Hopper, just why the heck not? Like maybe get him a handful of snaps here or there. I don't think Kalen King is anywhere near in that conversation at the moment, but anything that you would like to see out of either of those two?
I actually thought there was a chance King was going to come into the game.
With the slot position
when,
open.
When Bullard went down, I was like, okay, who's coming in? And then I was like, Zane Anderson. I didn't expect Zane to be out there. Him to me, like, who are some other guys who are like really like Dalton Levitt, I don't know if he like ever played non-garbage time defense for us, right?
Yeah, I was like,
I kind of thought of him in kind of the same ilk. I mean, maybe I'm just doing white safety special teams contributor stuff.
Well, but I think in those, like, the obvious consideration would have been just put Bullard back there at safety and then put Nixon in the slot or King in the slot and get one of those guys, you know, what outside corner, whatever you needed to do. I thought for sure they would go Nixon in the slot with Stokes and Valentine on the outside with Bullard and McKinney at safety. I forget which game it was. The only thing I wonder if there was a hesitation, was it Jacksonville? There was a game where Evan Williams got hurt and they put Javon Bullard back at safety and he had like his worst game. And it was like, maybe he just, you know, cause he didn't practice there all week and maybe he just wasn't in tune with what he was supposed to be doing at that spot. And maybe it was just a bit too much for him that they didn't want to rehash that and do it again where they had to kick him back to safety where he didn't practice all week or whatever. So instead of doing this whole musical chairs thing where Keishon was going to kick inside and Bullard was going to go back to safety, all right, we're just going to keep our corners the same, put Zane Anderson in at safety. And quite frankly, I thought he did fine. I haven't watched the L22 yet.
They had him in the post, which I thought was really interesting. So McKinney kind of actually played strong safety. And this might be something that you're seeing on Sunday too, right? Depending on you know, whatever Evan Williams' status is. So they basically have McKinney, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage, which I think at this point, if you're not getting thrown on deep, like, use McKinney down there in the box, like, get him closer to the ball at least. I don't think Zane Anderson did poorly or did, like, they just weren't really throwing to him in the middle of the field. And
he had that nice stop on third down right before the key fourth down at the end of the game. But yeah, other than that, it was pretty nondescript if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that free safety position is not super involved in the game other than being, you know, that ball hawk in the middle of the field. So it's a good way to hide a guy. I'll say that. Right. Yeah. So the fact that they're willing to play McKinney in the box and play Anderson up high when push comes to shove, I think is a positive sign. What was the other one? Hopper? I just don't like Hopper. I'm going to be honest. The film never made sense to me.
Yeah.
They drafted him in what, the third? They said they had a second round grade on him.
Yep.
He was projected on the consensus draft board to go like late fifth.
Yeah.
And like, to me, I was like, I guess he's like on paper athletic. Like maybe you want to use him on special teams. I could see a team taking him. I didn't give him like an undrafted grade, but like, I definitely wouldn't take him before the fifth and they took him in the third. So like, yeah, that's another one where I'm just like, I don't even count that, man. So
Jerrion Jones was right there for you. Another corner in your room potentially, but yeah, not to be apparently.
I was not a fan of the Hopper pick. I hope he proves me wrong.
Yeah, of course. Of course. All right, Packers Seahawks, final thoughts on that before we get out of here.
Give me Packers. I need a win. I need a win, please. I need, especially if this is like shaping up to be like a playoff, you know, rematch, right? I would like a win on the front end so that we know, you know, when we're coming back into Seattle, we actually, you know, we have some reps against this team at the very least, because I'm not feeling great about that Vikings game. I mentioned that before. I'm not feeling great about the Vikings game. I expect this team to probably go, 3-1 down the stretch, get the job done. Otherwise, lose to Minnesota, go back to Seattle, and hopefully they're dominant enough in this game that I don't have to worry about that Seattle matchup in round one.
Green Bay is going to beat Minnesota in Minnesota. I feel it in my I'm worried about this.
Look, I hope so. I really do. I hope so. I couldn't be happier to be wrong.
Actually, maybe they're just going to get all of their losses against good teams out of their system now, or they're going to finish the season 4-4 against good football teams, and they're going to lose the 4 regular season ones, and then Actually, I guess that'd be 5 regular season ones and then win 4 in the playoffs. So
let's do it.
Let's just do it that way. I was going to ask you one other thing, and now I cannot remember what the heck it was that I was going to ask. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. Speaking of those Minnesota Vikings, I get that they drafted JJ McCarthy in the first round. I can't, you know, you're already shaking your head at me. You don't sign Darnold.
You can't do it. You just got out of Kirk. If they go back to Darnold,
What if they go to McCarthy and Darnold is legitimately like goes somewhere and is like legitimately great and McCarthy's not as good as Darnold?
You drafted McCarthy already.
Yeah. I really like McCarthy. He looked really good in preseason. Like there was even a point in preseason, like that first game. I know he threw, I think, a pick 6 to Jack Jones, if I remember, at least a pick to Jack Jones. I can't remember who went to the house, but like he looked really good in that. He looked really good in camp. Like to the point where like it looked like it was going to be a matter of if not when, you know, when, not if he was going to get in for Darnold. Like it already looked like he was about to pass him. So like, I get it, but man, this is some really good quarterback play in Minnesota right now. And they're just going to like, this year they're not even, are you fully on the, this is just Kevin O'Connell magic?
No, I mean, Darnold does do some, like I always thought Darnold was a little bit better than his stats in like New York and stuff like that. I don't think he's as good as Kirk. I don't think he's as good as Goff. I just would not settle for that at quarterback. You already spent a first round pick. Like, what can you even get for an injured JJ McCarthy at this point? I mean, maybe in this quarterback draft class. This draft class stinks, but maybe you can get something for that. I mean, he would at least like, you got to win a couple playoff games before we have this conversation about killing our first round quarterback before ever even playing him in a real game.
That's fair. The longer that this goes on, the more and more intrigued. Was he like 5 touchdowns, no picks this week? Something for Darnold, something like that.
Good God. But,
yeah. So it's an interesting dynamic. I do agree. The report today was that they have yet to have a single contract negotiation. Like I've talked to a couple of Vikings guys and they were like, yeah, to your point, there's like, it's McCarthy. Like don't even pretend it's not, you know? So it's an interesting situation to me. I'll just put it that way. All right, Justice, what do you got coming out this week? Anything else you want to plug? Anything else you want to talk about? The floor is yours, my friend.
I mean, we're just going to be covering this injury report because that's the thing I'm most worried about this week. I'm sure we're going to be pumping out a bunch of content, but keep an eye on that injury report because I will be checking it out daily.
What would give you the most concern if a player didn't play in this one? Like, which player would you be most like, oh, God?
Jair.
Yeah.
Definitely Jair. I don't want, because they're going to throw to their wide receivers too.
Is Green Bay to the point yet? And I know they haven't clinched yet, right? But like, are they to the point yet where they're like, we're not rushing anybody back? Like, we're just like, you'd rather have you take the time and
I wouldn't. I mean, yeah, if you go 1-3, you have an 80% chance of making the playoff. Like, ultimately, your goal is to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right. So
I mean, you beat the Saints and you beat the Bears, like you're in, right? Like you're 2 easy games at home. Like, and now you don't want it to get to the point of like you need to win against the Bears in the final week to get in or some crap like that. Like that's not a great situation. But I don't know. It's such a weird dynamic because, like, on one hand, I don't want it to just be like, I don't even know yet. Like, I don't think we've got the clinching scenarios yet. If there's any way that they can actually clinch this week, but like if they all of a sudden clinch this week and then they really have nothing to play for or whatever. I don't even know that I want that, but I also don't want like a game in Green Bay against Chicago in the final week where like you got to win to get in either. So I don't know. Yeah. There's this weirdo, bizarro fine line.
Yeah. We're in this weird limbo right now where it's like, as long as you don't totally collapse, you're in, but you can't really get in a better spot than you're at right now.
And it's
great. That's awesome.
Swell. Yeah. All right. So you got injury report stuff coming out. Obviously you guys are going to be pumping out a ton of content. I don't know. Where are we following you on Twitter at JUMOSQ?
Yeah, I haven't changed it yet. So there we go.
Deal. All right. Go follow him at JUMOSQ. Thank you to all of you who joined us live. you know, spontaneously out of completely nowhere. So here I've realized what happened after. I think I created a link for Justice and I to do the recording, and then I sent him and went in the wrong room and went into our Packaday Live chat for tomorrow. So I'm gonna have to you know, fix this a little bit on the back end, but we can easily do that, and then we'll do our normal Packaday Live tomorrow. But Justice, I appreciate you a ton. You're the absolute best. Again, go follow him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for Justice and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.